Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Welcome to Bears Over Beers. I'm Jeff Berkus, a writer for Windy City Gridiron. And I'm on the other line with EJ Snyder, the site's lead draft analyst. EJ, are you over last Thursday night yet?
In a sort of hot, sort of emotional way. Am I worrying about it and losing sleep? No. So I guess I'm over it that way. Do I have questions? Yeah, I have questions. I'm not over the questions yet. They haven't played again, right?
No, I think we're going to spend some time today talking about some of those questions. But before we do, we are going to do a first on Bears Over Beers because it's not Bears Over Beers tonight. It is Bears Over Bourbons.
Bum, bum, bum.
We needed something a little stronger to take away the taste of that loss on Thursday night. And so we decided that we are going to, well, bring one of our favorite bourbons, or at least the bourbon to showcase. And so I'm curious, you mentioned before we started recording that you have a football-themed bourbon. I have no idea what that means. So let's share with the group.
Let's share with the group. So I was looking actually for a different bourbon that I'd purchased for a friend of mine when I went to the store, but they didn't have it. However, they had another offering from the same distillery, which is local to me in Gig Harbor, Washington, just across the bridge. And they have batch number 12 bourbon whiskey. And living here in the Pacific Northwest, 12s are pretty much famous as Seahawks fans. And the branding on the label is definitely a slightly off-color dark blue 12 to match that. And so I figured I'd pick it up. It is Heritage Distilling Company. And they say some fancy things about it, but let's be honest, it's bourbon and it's a small craft distillery. So I picked it up and that's what I'm going to be sampling tonight.
Oh, okay. Sounds good. At least the Seahawks won. They were my survivor pick for the week and they, they survived.
Yeah. I was going to say there's a close scrape.
Yeah. Well, I've got, I posted a picture of this on Twitter, but it's called Bibb and Tucker and it's, the reason why I bought it was because it was a really cool old-time bottle. Got a cork in the top. I'll try pretty much anything that says bourbon on it. And, you know, I have. This is from 35 Maple Street Spirits. It's in Kentucky. So it's, you know, it's a true Kentucky
bourbon.
It's got
the lineage, right?
And I just kind of, I don't know, I've been very nostalgic this year with trying to document a lot of Bears history and being a part of the top 100 list and having you know, a new article series coming out about this. And so I thought, old-timey bottle, let's do this. So this one has a cork. I'm taking off the cork, and I'm going to pour myself a little bit into a nosing glass. It's actually a scotch glass that I have.
Very nice.
So I've got, you know, I've got all the accoutrement.
Yeah, you've got atmosphere, and you're creating a scene. I'm just drinking bourbon out of, well, I do have a fun glass, but maybe I'll post a picture of the glass. It's a measured shot glass that goes up to 4 ounces, and it says say when on it, and it's got this little sort of graph line drawing on the side denoting. Now this is a very old glass. It's from the 1940s. I got it from my great grandmother, and it says 0 ounce for rabbits, 1 ounce for ladies, and it has a sort of little olive oil looking stick figure with a cocktail in her hand. And it has a gentleman, and it says 2 ounces for gentlemen sitting there talking to her. And then there's a picture of a pig, and it says 3 ounces for pigs. And then it goes up to the 4 ounce mark, and it says 4 ounces for jackasses. So,
okay. It's an interesting glass for sure.
Yeah, it's good times.
Well, I'm a big bourbon fan. I have been through Kentucky a couple times. My wife and I did the Kentucky Bourbon Trail Tour, where you'd visit, I think, 5 or 6 of the major distilleries, and then we've been to a couple more besides. They all fight, you know, to say like, ah, bourbon is the only bourbon that does blah, blah, blah.
And, X, X, and X.
Yeah, yes. And then we went to Jack Daniel's, which is in Tennessee, a couple years ago, and they were like, well, those people in Kentucky, they do it this way, but we do it this
those
way.
Those people.
And so right. It's funny because they're like, ah, don't drink bourbon, drink our sour mash, whereas all the people in Kentucky are like, don't drink their bourbon, drink ours. So I think that's kind of funny. But anyway, I do like bourbon, and this one's kind of fun. It tastes a little different. Has kind of a earthy, like kind of nutty type flavor. So,
oh, nice.
You know, just a little different, and it's a fun bottle. Something cool to have on your shelf. So, all right, we've got some, you know, hard liquor. Let's dive into this just monstrosity of a game from Thursday night. I want to start with Matt Nagy. Mm-hmm. I think this was one of the worst games, one of the worst called games I've ever seen. Finished the game, I think, with something like 35 straight passing calls. A couple of those were penalties, but I think it was called a pass play 35 straight times. You'd have thought that we were down by three scores, but it was either 4 points or 7 points, depending on where we were at in the game. Yeah. You know, I don't think he put Mitchell Trubisky in a position to succeed. I think he hid David Montgomery in favor of trying to play a lot of players. We've seen that before from him, trying to get a lot of the depth chart onto the field, but I think he did this to his detriment this time. David Montgomery was clearly the better back and just did not have the snaps. And I put this on Twitter. I think it seemed to me like he was playing like a frustrated kid in Madden, and he's just calling like four verticals every play and just heaving it downfield because he's frustrated and he knows that if he's not going to get it his way, he's just going to shut the PS4 off and try again later. That's kind of the game that he seemed he was calling. Felt very silly. One of the things that I really have a concern with is that he decided to not kick a 51-yard field goal and decided instead to go for it on 4th and 10, and it was middle of the third quarter when that happened. And if he would have kicked it and missed, he gives slightly better field position to the Packers. If he makes it, it's a 7-6 ball game, and you're in it to potentially win it with a field goal at 9-7. But I just think really bad football decision there. I don't know. I hope somebody's in his ear on that. I don't buy the idea that 50 yards was Pinero's limit. I mean, we saw that guy kick. The guy's got a leg. Now, maybe he's not the most accurate guy in the world, but length is not his issue. Distance is not going to be a problem for this guy. He can launch it. And to me, that was just coaching scared or coaching frustrated and thinking that you're going to get away with it. And I don't know. It was one of the weirdest and worst performances that I have seen from a head coach, period, but certainly from Nagy in his short time as head coach. Would you pick up from Nagy?
Yeah, my problem was that it started not well. So his scripted play sheet, you know, if you think he's got a script of anywhere between 10 and 20 that he's going to run, didn't go well. Like we didn't see a lot from that. We did see a little bit of pop from David Montgomery early, which was promising, but the rest of the offense really looked out of sync. The offensive line wasn't giving Trubisky a ton of support early on. They had some great snaps, and then they had some really inconsistent snaps, which is bound to happen. They didn't spend a lot of time playing together in the preseason, but when you see that and you see your quarterback struggling a little bit, what I expected or what I hoped for, what we talked about in our preview show, is that he was going to make an adjustment there and, you know, maybe simplify it, maybe go to some things that Trubisky really likes in terms of rollouts, you know, plan bootlegs, uses mobility, you know, lean on Montgomery and Davis a little bit more to pound the ball and let his quarterback hand it off a couple times and sort of get his legs under him. None of that happened. Like you said, it sort of intensified. And then where I really hoped it was going to happen was at the half, because they'd done very little to make any noise offensively in the first half. And then they came out and actually went farther away from that. Stopped running almost altogether. Last run was 5 minutes into the last called run was 5 minutes into the third quarter. Again, very close ball game. And after that, just tons and tons and tons of passes. And it looked like it just snowballed on Mitch Trubisky. He was feeling frustrated. He wasn't getting a lot of those completions to to build his confidence. There was a lot of lateral stuff out to the edges that sort of concerned me too. Lots of long throws out to the sideline for, you know, 2 yards or met right at the line stuff. So it wasn't fooling the defense, and it just seemed like they just kind of banged their head against the wall harder. And that's probably what concerned me the most, was the lack of adjustment and the sort of lack of realization of, hey, this is what's actually happening. I wanted one thing to happen, but this is what's actually going on the field. And I'm going to have to sort of sit on my hat here and change up my plan and see if, hey, maybe we should give the rook a couple carries, see if I can soften up that defense, get him fired up on a really physical run. And then maybe I'll work Trubisky into some, you know, shorter passes, tight ends, curls, hitches, build his confidence with a couple of rollout completions, and then see about asking him to, you know, go a little bit deeper into the playbook. It seemed like they just pressed right on deeper into the playbook and did none of that to kind of get the reins back on the game.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's a little bit of a, well, whose fault was it? Well, there's a lot of people's fault, right? I mean, the offensive line has some blame in this. There were some drops. I mean, Shaheen had a drop. Cohen had a drop. I think Gabriel had a drop. I don't know if that was on a penalty or not, but I remember him dropping a ball he probably should have caught. I think Robinson probably could have came down with a ball that he ended up not. So there were plenty of drops. And, let's get into Trubisky. I think it's Nagy's responsibility to help put Trubisky in the best position. Let's kind of put a bow on the Nagy piece of this. But let's get into Trubisky. I just simply think he's not a complete quarterback yet. And I think he definitely showed his weakness, but he faced an average. I saw this stat and then I lost it. I couldn't find it. It was an average of 5.6 or 5.8 defensive backs per play. And so if that's a real number, and again, I just saw it, someone tweeted out and then I couldn't find it again. But that's basically saying that most of the time he was facing 6 defensive backs. So a dime yep. defense. And then the rest of the time he was facing nickel, which nickel is the primary defense for most people, which means 5 defensive backs, 5 cents, nickel. Okay. So what did he do? Well, he threw underneath a lot because that's what you do when you've got a lot of defensive backs against you. You're not going to press it. And so he was taking what was there and it wasn't getting first downs. And okay, what we should have been seeing is, as you say, Nagy flipping the script and trying to run more into those soft defenses, but that didn't happen. And then I think you're right. He sort of seemed to lock on to one target, which that's concerning. And then he seemed to get a little frustrated, had some balls sail on him. Certainly that last drive, every ball just seemed to sail. And the interception in the back of the end zone was really bad. He locked on Robinson, made the wrong read, threw a bad ball. Like everything about that throw and that read, the play, everything was bad. He had Cohen short, tried to force it in there, and then threw a bad ball besides. So I think a lot of it spiraled out of control for him, and I think there's a lot of concerning things. I also think that he could have been put in a much better position to succeed with a better play calling mix. What's your level of panic with Trubisky right now?
Well, I'm certainly not panicked because it's not like I bet my life savings on the Bears, but am I encouraged by what he showed in the first game of the year? And the answer is no, I'm discouraged. We heard a lot of talk about how much more comfortable he was. He certainly looked that way in camp when we saw him. He's got all these weapons. Nagy says, oh, he's finishing my play calls. Just full confidence and sort of familiarity second year in the system with the people around you and the play calling. It didn't look at all like that. He looked like a scared high school quarterback that wasn't familiar with all that stuff and had been thrust into the lineup last week when the starter broke his collarbone or something. It just, he didn't look poised. He looked almost exactly like he did at the beginning of last year. And that brings up concerns about, hey, is the light too bright? Is the pressure too hot? Does he, you know, we know he can perform in pressure situations. We've seen it, but with this much buildup and this much hype, and you know this from having been at camp and just being fairly close to the Chicago market, there's a lot of hype this year, like as much hype as I've seen in many, many years. And did that sort of get on top of him and get in the way? I don't know. We're not in his head. But what I wanted to see from Trubisky was some poise, some accuracy, some command, all the things he showed in the first couple days of camp when he was making it look easy, especially on the short to medium throws. And then, hey, if he was going to open it up deep, that'd be great. But really sort of keep on pace, right? And that's pace of the offense. So get a few yards on first down and just keep that offense on schedule so that you weren't putting yourself in third and long and really adding to the pressure and then having a letdown. The other thing was he just didn't throw very well. His mechanics looked pretty good, pretty tight. They talked about that a lot on the broadcast, but we didn't see that kind of rhythm, accurate couple throws strung together in a row until, third of the way through the fourth quarter was the first time you really saw sort of back-to-back or three or four throws in a row that looked like, okay, now he's got it, right? And then it fell apart again on him. So the consistency wasn't there, and a lot of things that we had seen flashes of and been told were present weren't present. That's the objective truth. So I'm not panicked, but, you know, both Nagy and Trubisky walked into House Hall on Friday, and they probably looked at each other and said, we got a lot of work to do, right? This is not a small climb. We're not going to fix this like today.
Yeah, I think when we talked about Trubisky in the Trubisky episode, one of the things I said was growth is not linear. Growth is not linear for most of these guys, right? You're going to have some plateaus. You're going to have, at some point, a guy's not going to get any better. And towards the end of their career, obviously, their physical skills start to wane. And I said, you know, what are you thinking? Like, he's not going to regress in year three. He's not going to regress in year two in this offense. Like, sure, maybe he'll plateau a little bit before he gets better. I can see that. Again, growth is not linear. And then I saw regression. Like, I saw,
yeah, like, no, very clearly. I'd say you're absolutely right. There's no other way to look at that and say that he performed like anybody expected, and that's like he expected of himself, certainly in all his offseason interviews. Nobody's going to say that. And I really do think he was surprised by how that happened. Certainly the way Nagy thought he was going to progress was not in evidence. And, you know, unrealistic or not, the fans had a massive sort of appetite for progression, and we saw very little of that. So it's tough objectively to look at that performance and say anything except, wow, you're in the bottom third of quarterbacks right now, maybe even like the bottom fifth of quarterbacks with that performance. What are you going to do? Do I think he's going to stay there? No, we've seen him play much better. I mean, I think about the playoff game in Philadelphia, or with Philadelphia, and, you know, he's performed under pressure and he has strung those things together, but he can't wait to the fourth quarter. And quite frankly, he can't wait to the fourth quarter of the season. You know, he's going to have to show it in the next couple of weeks.
No, it needs to get better fast because there's some good opponents, and one coming up, and we're going to, you know, a tough assignment, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit. But let's do one more. I think you've got one extra one, but I have one more point that I wanted to make about some negatives that I wanted to highlight. But lack of the running game and a lack of play action. And it was pretty obvious that they weren't going to run the ball. But one of the things that really stood out when I rewatched this on Friday was the lack of play action. And I was getting a lot of people coming at me on Twitter like, well, you have to run the ball well before play action will work. Not sure the numbers actually bear that out. I think there's some pretty good stats that show actually play action works whether or not your running game's going well. And you'll see it actually. There's plenty of teams. The Patriots, Michelle had, you know, yard and a half per carry or something like that. But they kept doing it because they know how important that is to keep pounding it for them to at least respect the idea of a play action pass. And of course, Brady does play action quite well. But so does Mitchell Trubisky. And so the thing that drove me nuts was probably the best throws that I saw Trubisky make on Thursday night were on play action passes. A couple of the RPOs that he pulled and threw were good, but the actual called play action passes, he had some of his most confident and best throws of the night. And when you watch Dak Prescott, when you watch Lamar Jackson, when you watch Patrick Mahomes calling 40-50% of their called pass plays as play action, I really hope Nagy took that lesson. I really hope that he figured out that he needs to help his quarterback a little bit. And the Ringer guys talked about this. So Mays and Kevin Clark were talking about this in the offseason, and they were talking to Kirk Cousins. And Cousins was saying something effective that he really likes play action. He likes turning his back to the defense, basically because it's too much to process when he drops back with the whole field. And so he can really close down that processing time. and he can make better, faster decisions. And I feel like I see that with Trubisky. He doesn't have to process the whole field. He's probably not mature enough in his football intelligence to be there yet. And when he's able to just run some play action, he's able to process quickly and get the ball out of his hands. I assume that you agree with me on the play action thing, but do you have anything to add?
I absolutely agree with you. I think Cousins' reason for liking it is interesting. The reason I would like it if I was a quarterback, and Mays has talked about this at length, Robert Mays has talked about this at length, and another guy that talks about it at length is Doug Farrar, and they say the same thing. Play action, and the people they talk to in the league say the same thing even more importantly, which is play action, regardless of you whether you have any threat of a running game, holds the linebackers for a half a step, for a half a second. And that gives you a bigger window as a quarterback. So even if they know you're not going to run it, they can't just drop straight into pass coverage when you're motioning to the running back. Their head tells them, despite that, that they've got to hold for just that half a tick, and it opens up windows. So I would run it either way. Yes, I'm with you on play action. Yes, they need to run it more. And I think it's interesting with play action, but I think Nagy had too much motion in his offense. He had a lot of motion that basically got the snap count really low very often. And I understand they're using that to diagnose what the defense is going to do and how it's going to flex and react. But he used motion all the time, and then there was this tremendous lack of play action to mesh with that. And I think motion's got to come down a little bit. So, again, execution's a little bit straighter. And then, you know, add some play action in there and give Mitch just an extra half second. Why would you not do that?
Yeah, it's like, let's tie one hand behind my back, you know, while I do this. Like, there are easy calls to make. Get your guy in rhythm. He clearly wasn't in rhythm maybe all but one and a half drives of that game.
Yeah, I would say that's about right.
Do something nice. Was there a screen called?
Do something nice. I like that. Do something nice for the kid.
Did you see a screen called at all?
I saw a lot of disguised screens that were really just kind of lateral runs way out to the edge. They called a lot of those, and they got almost nothing on any of them. Almost every one of those got snuffed out, and actually was several of them were contested catches, which for no yards or a loss of a yard or a gain of a yard doesn't really matter. That's a lot of risk for – they had nothing. Like, the Packers were not having it. They were not fooled. I was like, stop calling that play or any variant of that play. It's not working. Do something else.
All right. I think I've beat my play action point to the ground. You had one more point you wanted to make about.
I had one more, which was a what went wrong. And that's the outside corners, which we've talked about in the lead up to the season as, you know, good for now, but not a lot of depth there. And they had a very hot and cold night. They both made some very good plays. Fuller, again, on the opposite side of those sort of wide screen passes coming up, tackling very heavily. He loves contact as a corner, even though he plays off. And Prince had a couple of good breakups as well, but they both had lapses. Amukamara got burned on the long pass across the middle, wasn't able to keep up with Devontae Adams. And there was another play later on where he, again, was just exposed for his lack of long speed. They had a very up and down night. They had some hot plays and they had some very cold plays. And don't think the league didn't see that. You know, maybe they already knew it. Amukamara has been around a long time, but he looked like he's dropped off a bit in top end speed. And that's a thing when you're an outside corner. So I would expect him to get picked on in that way, where they're really going to have to stretch his speed. They're, you know, if somebody's good at beating the press, they're going to go after Amukamara that way because he likes to press, play up near the line. But if they get by him, he's not able to catch up. His catch up speed's not great. So something to keep an eye on moving forward. And I wouldn't doubt. I think I tweeted out something during the game, like, you know, 2020 high round pick for the Bears is going to be a big outside corner, very likely.
Yeah, definitely.
Kind of probably was anyways, if they keep it up like this, it could be.
Yeah, I think I've always kind of thought corner was pretty high, but we're not looking there yet. I can't let you get into the film room yet.
Nope.
All right, we're gonna flip it around because what are the silver linings here? To me, the defense looks salty. At least we got that part right. I'm not sure what more we need to really say besides the fact that, you know, Pagano, man, he's bringing a more aggressive approach, resulted in 5 sacks. There was a 6th that did not count due to penalty. I think it was a defensive hold that negated it. There were 3 to 4 that were sure close. And there's that one that Rodgers absolutely looked like he was in the grasp and throwing it away. And somehow it was okay because it was Rodgers. They were not able to get any turnovers. And I think that's kind of something that no one's talked about. They limited Rodgers so well in this game. He had a couple nice plays. And I got to say, like we feared, one of the big plays was a broken down play. Another one was this play action rollout. And I was like, can you call that for Trubisky? Okay.
Right.
So I guess my point is that the turnover is going to be there when you're playing lesser competition. You know, not everybody's Aaron Rodgers. He's still a very good quarterback. And so he's very good at limiting his turnovers. He did have that fumble by Hockland Dix.
Yeah, that was a lucky bounce.
Hey, man,
bounce
right back in.
That's just the ball being oblong, but that ball was clearly out. It was a forced fumble. He didn't just drop it. It was definitely a forced fumble. So that's just and we talked about this in one of our preview shows about how many turnovers do we think. I think we're talking about Eddie Jackson at the time, and the fumble bit was like, well, fumbles are really fickle, and that was a perfect example of that.
So crazy. 5 Bears standing around, and he is able to
bounce right
grab
back
the
to
ball, like you hop back up, maybe, you know, half his torso hops back up and the ball's right there for him. It's so frustrating because of course that happened.
Of course.
So that's, you know, I think we're okay on defense. Like, I think we're going to be pretty darn good. And I'm really interested to see just how many sacks these guys can stack up. The other silver lining I had was Allen Robinson. I mean, we talked about it ad nauseum throughout the offseason, but man, he looks good. I think we nailed this one. Yeah, Trubisky stared him down a little bit. Yeah, that's an issue. Yes, he might see some additional attention because of that. But man, he was making plays. He's a legit number one. I feel really good about our 1,200, my 1,200 yard prediction. I think you might have even been a little higher. So feeling good about Robinson.
Yeah, he looked every bit what we thought he was going to be, and he was whooping his guy. And he played a couple of different cornerbacks throughout the night, and he beat them all. And I tweeted out something during the game about, you know, he's going to whoop whoever he goes against. And somebody said, well, not with this quarterback. And I'm like, that's not what I'm talking about. He's going to win his individual matchups because he is ready. And I'm not sure. I'll have to go back and rewatch. You said earlier you thought he dropped a ball. I didn't think he did. I thought he caught everything that was near him. So I may have
there was one over the middle. I don't think it was a great ball, but he got his hands on it. And I think he probably could have brought that one down.
Yeah, but he looked – I'm with you. He looked absolutely – locked in, and that's really good. Back to the defense for just a minute. There was also, you know, I would say 5 easily confirmable holding calls, which is we're used to that against the Packers, but there was an egregious chokehold. There was a very solid grab of the shoulder pad up near the neck, you know, and these are all on Mac. And some of those are not going to get – they're either going to get called as holds against other teams, or the player's not going to be quite – so the offensive lineman is not going to be quite so ballsy and actually try it. And Mac, or quite frankly, one of the other rushers, Floyd, looked great. A lot of people aren't talking about that. And Roy Robertson-Harris just mashed people all night long. So I think it's going to be a big year, and those numbers are going to increase because, again, not all quarterbacks are as savvy or mobile as Rodgers, and not all tackles are, let's just call it, as savvy as Bakhtiari and Blaga. So when they get a lesser pair of tackles or a less mobile quarterback, it's going to be a long day.
Yeah, sign me up for 6, 7, or 8 sacks every week.
Sure, that'd be great. I'd love it.
You have one more silver lining?
I do, and that's Montgomery looks ready to contribute in both phases. I know he's a rookie, but he had several very tough runs. He definitely showcased his ability to slip tackles. He led the nation in CFB in college football brackets in that category, forced missed tackles. Nobody else was really close. He was the clear number one, and he's able to do it in the pros, which is awesome. Showed a lot of toughness on those runs, but the big catch over the middle when he ran that little dig route right down the middle and caught sort of caught it and ended up spinning around, running, and sort of falling over with it. That's not a play that his predecessor, Jordan Howard, was ever going to make. Howard was a decent receiver. He's not making that play, and Montgomery made it in his first play as a pro, in his first game as a pro. So he looks ready to go, and I think they're going to have to take the wraps off him a little bit quicker than maybe they want to as a rookie. He's also competing very physically in pass protection, which is what's going to get and keep a rookie on the field. Projecting Trubisky when he's not getting handed the ball, and he looked ready, I guess, in all three phases, if you want to call it that. And that's big news. That's the acid test. Of course, a lot of people thought he was there, but the difference between, you know, the difference between, we used to say, paper and dirt is, you know, you draw it up one way and how does it really show up on the field? He showed up on the field in all three phases.
Yeah, 100%. He looked great and had that nice run where he showed off that contact balance, had that nice catch like you talked about, and he was a willing blocker. And so you know, let's maybe not target Mike Davis six times in the pass game next week.
I think you'll see that. I think you'll see that shift. And again, it's going to be a balance that works its way in. Davis looked very good running with power too, and is a solid catcher. I wouldn't put him up as a tremendous receiver, but the combination of those two guys, feel really good about it. We just have to use them more. I mean, that Nagy's got to call some plays so that Chicago can get the ball into their hands to get some balance and give Trubisky some breathing room.
Yeah, and you know, at the risk of sounding like an old school football guy right now, a lot of times the running game takes some time. It takes some time to wear down, right? So if it doesn't work right away, that's fine, because you just keep hammering it. You keep hammering it. Guy gets in a groove. You know, the offensive linemen start to impose their will, and offensive linemen love run blocking. You know, pass blocking is fine. But they love run blocking. And so,
yeah, the Bears line's built for that, too. A lot of times you get, you know, very light in the pants pass blockers in the current NFL, because they're going to be pass blocking a whole lot more than they are run blocking. The Bears line's not that way. Like, Massey is a big, strong guy. Obviously, we've talked about Kyle Long a ton. He's a mauler. White hair, same thing. Country strong, wrestling background, loves to get on top of people. Daniel's bulked up tremendously in the offseason and looks ready to push the pile as well. Leno, I think, is a decent run blocker, but probably the least good of the bunch, but he's not bad at it. So you got four out of five who are really good at it, and one who's decent. They're ready. They want to run guys over. So let's do it a little bit. Soften up those rushers. Let the offensive linemen get their shots in on those guys, and let Montgomery take his shot at the second level, because he's shown capable of using it.
All right. Well, speaking of shot, you said give him a shot. I'm going to finish this shot of whiskey. We are going to close the book on this game, and we're going to move forward to look at the Broncos game. But before we do, we're going to take a quick break for an ad.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity, but giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
All right, EJ, let's get into this Denver game.
Let's do it.
Last week we talked about three keys to success and three things we're worried about, and then there was sort of some overlap, and I think it's one of those, like, well, you can kind of take this both ways, and so we're just going to cut it down to three, particularly since we talked for an hour previewing the Packers game. We don't want to do that again. So we limited ourselves to three each. So for me, I'm going to start off I think it has to start with Matt Nagy. We've talked before about how we fear Vic Fangio knows how to push Trubisky's buttons. I think that's absolutely true. But I also think that Matt Nagy should know, you know, what Vic Fangio is all about. He should know what makes him tick. And so I think this game is so much about Matt Nagy putting Mitchell Trubisky in a position to succeed because he knows what Fangio wants to do with that Denver defense against him. So that's my number one key to success is Matt Nagy having a good game plan and being willing to change it on the fly to figure out what works.
Yeah, until we see that one change, I think that's just going to be our number one going forward. We need to see Nagy demonstrate that, just like we need to see Trubisky demonstrate things on the field. We have to see Matt Nagy demonstrate things on the sideline and in the locker room at halftime. And when he starts to do that consistently and call a game plan that really plays to the strength of his team, I think we'll see things turn around pretty quickly. But until then, it's kind of a wait and see, like, show me, right? It's the Missouri of the NFL. Show me you can do it. I know you can mentally. I know you're capable. Do it when the lights are on. And that's going to stay that way for a while. I think my, you know, key after that is I really think the defense is going to mash Denver's offense. Mm-hmm. Flacco's not particularly mobile. He's not been good for several years. He didn't look very good against the Raiders. The Broncos are down a starting offensive lineman. We just talked about what happens when the Bears defense, as rabid as it looks right now, comes up against a depleted line with a less mobile quarterback, and they're looking at a depleted line with a less mobile quarterback. I think the Bears defense feasts against the Denver offense and maybe even knocks Flacco out of the game. So it'll be interesting to see just how much and how quickly they can knock that offense out, because I think they're gonna.
Yeah, my third key I have, if nothing else, win the game on defense. Take the ball away from Flacco and score. I think it's time for the Bears defense to pile up more sacks and start the turnover parade. That's exactly what I think needs to happen. Like, I think we might be getting a little bit of a, I think we're due for an overcorrection, but certainly a correction from last week's play calling. And we talked about it a lot so far. But I think that Nagy's got to be willing to grind out a victory here. And I think that also starts with your amazing defense and just absolutely destroying worlds. Because, like you said, Joe Flacco, he had one very nice playoff run with the Ravens, cashed in with a very nice contract. Obviously has a Super Bowl. Great career. Good for him. Not a great quarterback right now. And not exactly showing it for Denver. And I don't think he's putting fear into the hearts of any Bears defender. This is one of those games, kind of like back in the Urlacher days, where it's like, we need to score on defense. We need to do everything we can. Because on the flip side of it, this is a very good defense that we're going to be playing. I know they didn't show it against the Raiders. I get that. But there are some really talented players on that Broncos defense. And it's just a matter of time before they start to get some stuff going on. And I don't want to be dropping back 50 times. I don't want Trubisky to be dropping back. I'm not going to drop back at all. But I don't want Trubisky to drop back 50 times and to face Bradley Chubb and Von Miller. I don't want that at all. And so the other key that I have, I'll just
run
the effing ball. That's my key. Dave Montgomery was your top pick in the draft. You traded up to get him. Give him carries. Mike Davis looked good. Give him carries. Put Tariq in the backfield and give him carries.
Like, yeah, we haven't talked about that yet, but that's absolutely the case. Is you need to run Tariq Cohen. He was lined up in the backfield for, I think, four snaps and didn't have a rush out of the backfield. So I don't like the Tariq Cohen slot receiver iteration. I think you put him in and flex him out, and that gives him the matchup. If you put him out and he's matched up on a nickelback or a dimeback, straight up negate some of that quickness advantage that he's got. Whereas if you put him in the backfield, they're most likely going to put one of their inside backers on him, and very few inside backers in the league can cover him. So you get a better advantage whether or not you keep him there. And if you do keep him there, we've seen what he can do, you know, attacking and defense just with a handoff. So I'd say run those three guys, platoon them. It is at altitude. It is early in the season, you know, give them all 10 carries and see what happens and spread it out. Keep them fresh. Have the line really get into their run blocking groove. I'd love to see a, you know, Kyle Long, Bobby Massey double team on Von Miller and really, you know, get on that guy. He's not a spring chicken and he loves pass rushing. And if he's got to stand up against two big heavies that really want to drive him into the dirt, that gets old real quick. Chubb is a little bit more stout as a run defender just physically, but go after the weak. I don't want to call Von Miller the weak side because that's not really true, but go after the smaller side and really, you know, get after him and run Montgomery at him. Make him, if he's going to defeat the double team block and slide through, he's still got to get Montgomery down, and Montgomery's not going to go down easy. So I think that's a, and Davis the same way. Davis likes to hammer as well. So it's going to be a key that says that's great. And the other thing about that Denver defense is the pass rushers, who we mentioned, are amazing. The linebackers are pretty good. The secondary did not look good. And so, again, this is the place where you've got a guy like Robinson who's looking really good, and press Robinson on those corners, move him around, put him in the slot, get him favorable matchups, and get him the ball because he's got the potential to make some hay for those, again, after you run the ball, some of those play action passes. The Denver secondary did not look as crushing as it has in years past. And guess who's out for this game?
Bryce Callahan.
That's right. Mr. Bear, Bryce Callahan, is not available for this game, which Bears fans are familiar with. So, again, another advantage for the Bears when they do decide to pass. But, again, I want that to be a balanced option, either 50-50 or maybe even a little bit, you know, 60-40, because get that run going because you can physically sort of wear down those pass rushers and then, you know, have Robinson have some of those breakout throws when you've got really good, strong bites on play action because Montgomery and Davis have been pounding out, you know, 4 and 5 yards a carry.
Let me circle back to your point about the altitude. And I think it's an important one for everybody to understand is that Denver at home in September has been basically unbeatable.
Quagmire,
even with,
yes,
like, even with just like not very good teams, they still win in September. And so they have this advantage. I don't know that I really get like why it's not an advantage all year round. I guess I don't know enough about altitude differences, or maybe like fields slow down a little bit or guys are in game shape. I have no idea. I don't really get it. And I will just mention personal story. I am not a professional athlete. I am far from it. So let's get that on the table right
That's
now.
Right.
But I do run half marathons, and I have run in altitude. I've run in Colorado. I've run in Montana. I've run in Utah. And when I was able to acclimate for a full week in Utah, I ran quite well. When I was out the day before in Montana, it was like I was running in quicksand, and I couldn't really go any. I'm slow to begin with, but I was much slower than I would have liked to be. It just felt like I couldn't get it going. And I ran in Denver last summer, and I was there for a week in Denver, and then I ran in the foothills, which was another additional, you know, 1,500, 2,000 feet. And I just felt kind of terrible the whole time. And I mean, I finished, but again, it wasn't pretty. And so this thing's real. I mean, a lot of people travel, a lot of people experience it. You know, you walk up a, you know, flight of stairs, you're like, oh, why am I so winded? Or, you know, you drink a beer and you're really
super
feeling
loopy,
it in Colorado for some reason. But I think it's a real thing. And so I don't know if the Bears went out early. I don't know what they're doing, try to negate some of that. But it's real. What I think is interesting is that the Broncos played on Monday night. So they have a short week. They played late Monday night, too, got a later start. And then the Bears had a Thursday game, so they've got like a 10-day recovery. And so maybe a little bit of that helps equal things out. But the altitude thing is no joke. Like, they are going to feel this. And so don't gloss over that. That's a really important factor. And it's the reason why I've been worried about this game from the beginning is that Vic Fangio and altitude. It kind of scares me. So do you have any other keys to success you wanted to cover?
I just want to see the team not try and overcompensate. I want them to get back to some basics and not say, hey, we need to right every wrong that we had in week one. We just need to get better, right? Nagy needs to call plays better. Trubisky needs to put up a more unified front, scan the field a little bit better. For for lack of a better term, just relax, because he's going to play a little bit better if he relaxes, and that things are going to play together. The defense just can sort of keep going. That's fine. I think they can get ready to tee off a little bit, but I don't want to see the offense try and overcompensate and kind of get back into that Madden mode you were talking about, where they're desperate for big chunk plays. They were super close in the Packers game the entire time and then didn't play like it, and I think that just made problems worse. I need them to kind of take one series at a time. I know it's totally cliche, and say, what can we do to execute on this series that makes us better than last week? Can we mix it up a little bit? Can we, you know, can I, Trubisky, throw the ball a little bit better? Can I, you know, stay clean on my reads? Can the line block people and not let jailbreaks occur like they did last week? Like, everybody's, you know, it's back to the Bill Belichick thing, right? Do your job, right? Everybody's got to do their job just a little bit better. And I think if they do that, the sum of the parts is going to be greater. They may not blow Denver's doors off, but I think they probably can compete in game despite the September history in Denver. They just all have to do it, really, especially on the offensive side, and kind of do it together. But I don't want to see them try and overdo it or get really disappointed if it doesn't happen quickly. If they go down, you know, 7 points, say, on the opening drive, let's not panic. Let's just march out and see what we can do, you know, play after play, drive after drive, and not make some really egregious mistakes that we made in week one.
Absolutely. Back to some fundamentals and try to grind out, even if it's not pretty. You know, don't have to play the perfect game. Just play a really good game, and you're better on paper, and you should win those. So, okay, well, that leads us into our prediction, why the Bears will win or lose this game. I've really gone back and forth on this. As I said, this game has worried me. But for me, why the Bears will win. I think that despite the bad break of playing Denver in September, I just think they have the better defense, and I actually think that they have the better offense, even taking into account this debacle from last Thursday. I think it's going to be a bit of a grinder, because I think the one thing you want to do against Denver is not expose yourself to those great rushers that they have. But I think that the defense steps up, makes some big plays against Flacco, who, you know, I think, I don't know how many more games Joe Flacco is going to play in the NFL. Maybe it's just one. Maybe the Bears send him home, because he might not want to finish this game out. But, you know, this is a guy that's just kind of playing out the last part of the string on the last part of his career. To me, this feels like take the under. This feels like a 13-6, 17-6. Kind of day, somewhere in there. That's the kind of game I think we gotta grind out and start to rebuild some confidence and hopefully establish some things, make some things look good, turn some clock, you know, really feature those running backs. That's kind of the game I'm thinking, that I'm envisioning, and that's what I'm hoping for, is a nice Bears victory, but a low scoring one at that. What about you?
I'm thinking a Bears victory, and I think it's probably because of the differential between the Bears defense and the Broncos offense, which I led off with. But if you think about what they did to the Packers, and again, that's the defensive side of the ball, not the offensive side of the ball for the Bears, they were playing some very solid players on offense, right? Much better quarterback, which makes a lot of difference in the NFL, and basically played him to a standstill. He got one drive with a heave that took up about 40 yards and then a jump ball to Jimmy Graham, and that was the only score that occurred. So if they can play a stacked offense, or at least a very solid pro offense, let's put it that way, to a standstill, what are they going to do against a depleted line and a quarterback that isn't in Aaron Rodgers' stratosphere? I think the differential there is the Bears are really going to cause some havoc. They're going to beat up the quarterback. They're going to limit games. They're going to keep the Broncos off schedule. And then they might start to generate some of those turnovers as well. Now, whether or not those turn into scores, it'd be great if they did. That could certainly swing the game quickly. But I really do think the Bears' defense is going to bury the Broncos' offense, not just play it to a standstill. And then, again, like we said, if the offense plays decently and puts up, you know, 13 points, 14 points, like, I think that's going to be plenty, because I don't see them. I don't envision them letting Denver score that much. So I think that's going to be the difference. I don't think it's going to be a high scoring affair on offense for the Bears. But I'm going to say a close victory for the Bears, even with the September record.
I think the Vegas line for over under 40.5 or something like that. I think it's the lowest of the week, and I'm still really tempted to just take the under. I was kind of like the Jets Bills game last week. I took the under there. And I just never really feared them crossing the 43 point threshold there. And I kind of just have this feeling that this is the kind of game that it's going to be. Of course, you know, things surprise you. Don't get me wrong, but
absolutely,
this one kind of has the makings of an old school grinder. So, all right, well,
oh, I have one more for the Bears. Put Cordarrelle Patterson in the box.
Yes,
put him on the shelf.
Yeah,
right. If I was Nagy and his coaches, I think you probably are in agreement with me here, but we saw way more of Cordarrelle Patterson than we thought in terms of snap counts and usage. I was not expecting that. It was not effective in any part of it. And if I was Nagy, again, going back into House Hall on Friday after that game, I would look at my offensive coaches and I would say, look, we have 45 snaps of Cordarrelle Patterson on offense for the rest of the year. Sprinkle them in where you want them, but don't go over 50. I don't want to see more than 50 snaps total. Run or pass, I don't care. Gadget play, you do whatever. But on the mainline offense, I don't want to see Cordarrelle Patterson for more than 50 snaps. Use him as a change of pace, not the pace. Because everybody that's tried to use him as a mainline starting player, especially as a wide receiver, has failed. And I don't think the Bears are going to succeed. So that would be the one more for me, is just put him in the box. Pull him out when you need a change of pace. Do something interesting. But the terrible run on third and one, like, he never had a chance because the Packers D-tackle beat Whitehair cleanly and badly. But when you have Davis and Montgomery in the backfield for third and one and you run Cordarrelle Patterson, I really have to question your wisdom.
He's not a running back. Don't put a running back in to give you a one-yard gain. Like, I don't get it. No, it was crazy. And he was running routes down the field. Nagy was seduced by the physical presence of Cordarrelle Patterson. It's happened to a lot of coaches, and that's why a lot of coaches eventually get frustrated and jettison him, because it's like, well, he's not meeting the expectations that I have for him. You know, Belichick used him right.
Yeah.
And that's really what you have to do, is just say, you know, this guy's, you know, a 4-6 kind of play guy, and that's it. And we're going to use him for this, and that's it. And we're going to use him on kick returns, and that's it. Like, don't try to make him into something he isn't. And absolutely, 100% agree with you on that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like the ninth thing on my list from that game. Yeah. But yeah, definitely made my list.
Yeah. So how was your bourbon?
You know, it's really good. We've made cocktails with it. You know, we like Manhattans in this house a lot. Old fashions are pretty good too. So it's actually not bad for that, because it just gives kind of a little different flavor. But I just had it neat. No water, no ice, anything like that. Just had it neat, and it's really good, really solid. I think it runs somewhere in the $50 range of bottles, so it's a little expensive for a bourbon, but it's quite tasty, and I think it's a fun one to highlight. I don't know how well, hopefully we're not doing this very often. You know, maybe we'll do some celebration bourbons or celebration scotch or somewhere down the road, but we don't want to be doing this too often, but fun one to highlight. So what about yours?
Ran a little bit clearer, lighter than I typically like a bourbon. I like bourbon to be a little bit more brown and a little bit hotter, sort of on the mouthfeel than I would like. I like a bit smoother, a bit higher in the sugar, I suppose. And the other one that I was actually looking for from this distillery was one that was aged in oak barrels and then finished in vanilla barrels. And that was a very nice balance to the smokiness, which is why I was after it. And that one had that, not sweet finish, but more balanced finish. This is definitely leading towards, you know, a lighter bourbon that finishes a little bit hotter. I had it with one piece of ice, which was about right, cooled off a little bit. But, you know, as it warms up, the water helps a little bit, but not my favorite. But I know plenty of people that love bourbon and will probably like the balance of the bottle. And I'll try and go find that vanilla one, because I do like that one, both straight and mixer. But, you know, again, fun little one-off. We were going to do it later in the season, but it just kind of felt like the right thing to do after the opening game.
You might have to send me a bottle of that. Let's talk offline.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll see what I can do. I know it's runs right towards your taste, so I figured you'd enjoy that. I was trying to find it, but yeah. So as we get going, we'll continue these preview episodes. Of course, follow the podcast at Bears Over Beers on Twitter. Jeff is at Gridiron Born. I am at the Draftsman FB. Anyways, we're going to bring you the previews. We hope that the Bears can celebrate a glorious victory in Denver. But until then, bear down.